don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
I gotta do right before they call me home.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is November 16th, 2011. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Miss Mary Buttafuoco calling in out of New York. She has a story to tell, and she's going to let us know about her life being a battered woman, survivor of domestic violence in a very difficult situation. So she's going to share her story tonight, and we look forward to reaching out and helping anyone that we can. Our call-in number is 347-826-7273. If you have any questions or would like to speak with Mary, go ahead and give us a call. Let me welcome my co-host Boyd to the show.
Oh yeah, I would like to just say we appreciate everybody who tunes into the show every week, and we thank Miss Mary Buttafuoco for joining us tonight to tell her story. And we definitely would like someone to be touched and blessed by the story tonight. So without further ado, we would like to turn the mic over to Miss Mary Buttafuoco to introduce herself.
Hello, Lucinda and Robert. Thanks for having me on your program. I appreciate it. Yes. Well, I guess I'll start from the beginning. I was married at a young age, and I didn't realize that my ex was a batterer until maybe 6 months into the relationship. At that time, I was already married to him. So years ago, you married, and then, you know, today they live together, so they know what they're getting into. But when back then, you married, and then you found out what you bought. You know, today you try. And before you buy, but back then you just got married, and that was it, and you didn't know. And I just always attributed it to, well, maybe he had a bad temper, or maybe I did something wrong, and it seemed like every time something would happen, I would get blamed for the situation, you know, for everything. And so at that time, in the early 70s, domestic violence wasn't treated as it is today. Today, people are aware of it. They're more aware of child abuse. They're more aware of domestic violence. Back then, it was just like, well, it's a domestic dispute, and the police didn't really do anything about it either. Not until like probably the late 70s, the early 80s is when the actually different shelters came about. And I remember watching this show with Phil Donahue. It was a talk show, and I was sitting there watching the program, and I'm seeing all these ladies, and they were talking about how their husbands beat them and this and that. And then they had a counselor as one of the panel. And she was saying, yeah, this is how they are, and it's a syndrome, and they say they're sorry, they cry. And I said to myself, oh, my God, it sounds like my husband. That's when I realized that it wasn't just a little temper. It was a whole conglomeration of all kinds of ways of making you feel insecure. And I had, at that time, I had the two girls. And then I left him, and he begged, and, you know, that's kind of like how it goes. They beg you back. And then I went back with him, and I ended up having my son. And in the counselors, when I was talking to them here and there, they were telling me, when you take them back the second time, or they get worse, and everything they said was true, because he did get worse, and he kidnapped my kids, and I was living in California, and I didn't drive at the time, and I was like, really, it was really a hard life. I had to hop buses looking all over for them, and then he'd have the children call me up and taunt me, And he was really very, very brilliant the way he set things up. And, of course, he was my first really, really long relationship out of my home. And so I wasn't really, I was streetwise because I grew up in the streets, but emotionally, when I'm emotionally involved with somebody, I don't see them I see them in a different light, you know, I tolerate more, you know. And he, after a while, I got separated from him, and the court ordered a separation, and he had asked me if he could pick them up in the middle of the week. And I said, well, to tell you the truth, all right, you know, I knew that the court order said he can have them every other weekend, but I felt bad, you know, because I didn't drive and I didn't have the money to really give him things that he could give him because he was in construction. And I said, you know what, let him pick them up for a little while. He said, I want to take him for ice cream. And I thought, oh, that'd be good. I said, I was at a friend's house, and I said, give me a little bit of time because they were playing in the yard, and I'll have them ready for you in about an hour. Go to find out. And then he had my phone turned off. I didn't know that. And he came not even 5 minutes of me going across the street to the apartment building. And come on, kids, let's go. Little did I know he had it planned. He took them to a place called CAR, that's a child abuse registry, and said that this is the way I kept them. They were playing in the woman's yard all day. So I said, oh, my God, let me call the police. I had no phone. So, I mean, this guy was, like, horrible. And then we were involved in a religion at that time that he took to it more than I did because it was a very male-dominated religion. And the female, a woman in the religion, has to really be in full submission to the husband. And so, of course, I wanted to please the God that I worshipped, and, of course, the religion to have a good status. So anything he said and did, and I would always go along with it, you know, unless it broke some kind of rules. But as far as anything, he had it made the control that he kidnapped them twice, and then very last time, I didn't get him back for like 3 years. And,
Wow.
So, honestly, I hate to say till this day, I'd like to do a program on that myself, and I think you guys should do one, too, on parental alienation, because what happens is once you're taken, your child is ripped away from you, even though you're the parent that's not at fault, the other parent, and he went and he married this other woman, and the woman was planting seeds in their head, too, that I was no good, I was this, I was that. And, it plays on the kid's head. So till this day, I mean, they're grown, they're adults and everything, but I never had the relationship like another parent where it's just like a sister relationship because they were ripped apart from me at young age, and there's a hole there. And I feel it, and I thought that, you know, in time it would heal. And it did heal my wounds, but the thing is that it never filled the holes that were empty in their heart. And they still, deep down, resent me when it wasn't. They know. They went with me to the shelter, and they were in the shelter, and they saw the injuries that I had, but that didn't, it still doesn't, it's still the relationship was ruined, you know. So to this day, I mean, I speak to my kids and everything like that, but I don't have a relationship really with them that someone else would have with their child. So that's the sad part, you know. But
wow. And that's a lot of brainwashing
on
his part.
Oh, yeah. And that's part of it, too.
So you can see what you went through, though, and then for him to still be able to have that much control over them and what they're thinking. That's pretty tough.
Well, they're grown women, so, I mean, you know, they should be able to reason now and weigh it out, the situation. I mean, it's not
mm-hmm.
like they're little kids anymore, you know.
Right.
And eventually you have to come to terms with it, you know. So we as adults, you know, sometimes we say, I don't know how my mother did this and that. But when we get older and mature, we say, yeah, I know why she did that, because she maybe didn't have the kind of money or she didn't have. You start to reason, you know,
right.
as an adult, you know. You don't hold them to, you know, certain things they did because when you life itself presents a lot of problems. Life itself has its ups and downs. So you kind of understand that, you know, your parents did certain things for certain reasons, but for you not to, like, really talk to them that much because of what happened and you resent them when then you know who the perpetrator was, that doesn't make any sense to me, you know?
Exactly.
It really doesn't, you know? And growing up, I grew up in high crime areas, so as a kid, I was around a lot of violence, just that the same with you, Rob. And, you know, I got involved in things, too, as a kid. And when I got married, I threw everything like that, and I didn't, you know, party anymore or anything like that, and I straightened my life up, and I never, you know, took drugs in front of my children. I never was promiscuous. So really, they don't have much to say, and I've seen people. And you know me, I talk with a lot of people and I have programmed myself. And some women that were worse than I could ever be get more respect from their kids. So you figure it out. I can't figure it out, you know. But it's the the alienation that if a parent takes the child and brainwashes it and says the mother's no good and this, that, and the other and keeps doing that, even though they know the parent was innocent, eventually they start to believe it.
Right.
You know? And I used to feel as if, like, then it was role reversal because then I would used to maybe get to see them once in a while. And there was times where I went out there. He lived like 75 miles from where I was living in California. And I didn't drive at the time, so I'd ask somebody to give me a ride out there. There was there. I never forgot their sixth grade graduation. So we went out there. And I had plans to take him that weekend. It was very good that I brought my custody, not the custody papers, but the order that that was my weekend. And so the wife, she played the game also. Instead of being, you know, a normal person, she played along with it too because she resented me. And so I'm ready to take the kids. I went and I saw the program, the graduation program, whatever. And I said, okay, come on, we're going to go. So the teacher says to me, hold it 1 second, the police are on their way. I said, the police are on their way for what? She says, the mother called. And, you know, she's thinking that she's the mother, but I'm really the mother, but, you know, I don't have custody anymore, you know. So I said to the teacher, no, I'm really the parent, you know. No, no, you're not. I don't see you. I don't, you know, I never saw you come to the school. Whatever, okay. So I said, whoa. Good thing when the police came, she tried to set me up, but she this time she blew it because I had the papers that I get them on the weekend. But she would see how they would always try to set me up to get me in some kind of trouble. But meanwhile, they broke the court order by trying to get me arrested for my visitation. So what I did was I started to document all these things they were doing to me. And I brought it into court, and I won the custody back. But I had to go through hell.
Right.
You know? So,
I read somewhere that at one point in your relationship, and maybe you can talk a little bit more about things that happened in your relationship, but that your church leaders told not to leave them.
Oh, yeah. At one point, when I started to realize that I was a battered woman, I told they're considered elders, but in another one you would call it a priest in another religion, you know, that type of they're in that type of position. And I told them, I said, listen, I said, I can't take it anymore. I said, he's going leaving the house, going door to door, preaching to people, knocking at their doors and trying to get them to be Jehovah's Witness. And meanwhile, this is what he's doing to me. Well, you're not reading the Bible enough. You're not doing. Now, your requirement as a Jehovah's Witness is to go door to door. Every Jehovah's Witness is supposed to go door to door to recruit, you know, new people or whatever. And he would say that they told me the reason why it's probably happening is because you're not having a close relationship with your God. You're not going door to door enough. You're not conducting Bible studies. Now, let me explain a little bit about this. A normal Jehovah's Witness life is 5 studies a week, and that's a personal study with someone that you recruit. You must have a family study with your children. You must go to, at the time when I was in there, I don't know now, but it was 3 meetings a week. So that would be Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Additionally, on Saturday morning, you would be going door to door. You would spend your own money, your own car fare, to go to these places, and then you would purchase books from them, from the organization, and then you would turn around and resell them as you go door to door. So they were telling me that the reason why it was getting worse in my relationship is because I wasn't going door to door enough, I wasn't conducting enough Bible studies, it was all me. So instead of me feeling like, wow, maybe it is me, my husband's hating me, the religion's hate, you know, I was feeling like getting more and more isolated. And I couldn't speak because in the organization, in the Watchtower organization, you're not really allowed to go outside of that nucleus, because then it's going to show the world that the organization isn't as pure as they're trying to make it seem to be, you know, out to be. So I couldn't really go outside of that bubble. So a friend of mine, that's where I started to contact the Shelter for the Battered Women in California. But I used to just call him up after he left. I used to call them up and talk to them on the hotline on the phone and say, listen, this is what he did to me today. The lady was saying to me, you better get out of there because one of these days is going to kill you. And I kept saying in my head, because I didn't want her to know, my husband is a Jehovah. I was trying to protect the religion at the same time, that because they have you so convinced that that religion, their religion is pure. There's nothing, any of this stuff goes on. It's in the other religions. It doesn't happen in Jehovah's organization. There's no pedophiles. Meanwhile, if you get, if you look at the stats on the pedophilia in that organization, you will not believe it. And so many people in that organization trust other elders to walk their kids door to door, not knowing that these can be convicted felons for pedophilia. So, I mean, there's a lot of really things that are going on in that organization. And the reason why they don't want you to go outside is because maybe the light will turn on your head and you'll say, wow, you know. So I blame them a lot for it, too, because they discouraged me to leave. And at one point, he had split my head open so bad. Oh. And they told me that, you know, again, you got to stay at your husband. You have to be submissive. So it's like I was between a rock and a hard place. And finally, something just kept saying to me, when I would talk to the ladies on the phone, they'd say, you better get out of there. You better get out. And I started getting more strength, because it's very frightening, especially when you have no skills. I had no education, no skills. You figured, all right, it was an apartment, but it was still a home. Even though it was not a happy home, it was some place for me to put my head down on at night. Where I'm going, I don't know, because I'm going to have to pick up and leave with my 3 kids, start a new life. It's like I don't want to jump in this hole, this big hole, but there's a hole behind me too. So I'm like, you know, I am afraid to pull them up, root them from school. How do I support myself? Where do I go? Can I put it to keep it together? So there's a lot of things that go in your head. And even though you know you got to get out of there, you're still afraid because you don't know what's behind the door. You know the devil you have, but you don't know the devil you're going to get, you know, that type of thing. So I just packed up one day and just packed up whatever I could, like just their clothes and my clothes, a couple of suitcases. And thank God that there's a thing that we all should do now and then is send money to the battered women, and maybe send like donations, because when you're running, you only run with the clothes on your back, and they could always use blankets, toothbrushes, because you got to flee. So basically, that's what I had to do. And if it wasn't for them, especially the one I was in, it was like a blessing for me, even though I was uprooted. I was so naive, I didn't even know how to write a check out. That's how controlled I was by this man. He controlled the money. He controlled everything. Anything that I ever wanted to pursue, he knocked it. I kind of wanted to be a lawyer at one point, and I thought about it, and I said, nah, I can't do that. I can't leave my kids. I don't want to leave my kids with strangers. They went through hell as it is, starting all, and then not having a mom around. So I stuck with it, and then sure enough, years later, he kidnapped him. And then let me tell you something else, too. Something else happened, and I was probably separated maybe a couple of years from him, because I didn't get divorced until 2 years later. I left him. I got divorced at 10 years, but I left him after 8. And one night, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and the bell was ringing, and I was scared because I lived on the first floor in California. And we used to, I don't know how it is in Arizona, but in California, the wind is slide, you know. In New York, they go up. In California, they kind of slide across. So we used to put sticks behind there. So, like, you know, no one could come in at night if they try to open it, the stick. It's like a dowel, I think that's what it's called. So we used to put that, we put that in the window in case somebody tries to open it. And I was scared because I was living alone. And I still, you know, at that point he hadn't stolen them yet. But anyway, the bell was ringing. So I answered the door. And, I said, who is it? And he said, it's me. And I knew it was him. And I said, oh, well, maybe something happened with his family because it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Because after all, his mother was there, my kid's grandparents. So that I didn't have a problem with. So he goes, hurry up. You got to open the door. So I really thought something happened. And I opened the door and don't turn on the light. And I'm thinking, why? Maybe he got hit in the face. What's going on? Sure enough, he knocked me down. He beat me up and he raped me. Now, and let me tell you something. He bit my neck an actual bite, okay? And the next day I felt like crap, you know. I just felt, even though he used to be my husband, I mean, I wasn't a fit divorced. I was still separated, but the law still saw it as married. So that's another thing that I'm on a mission to do, is to expose marital rape. But when I went the next morning and I spoke to the elders in the Kingdom Hall, and I told them, look what happened. Oh, well, you had intimacy with your husband. I said, no, dude, you don't understand. Look what he did. You opened the door. Once you have intimacy with your husband, it means that you allowed it. I go, allowed it? I said, listen, I thought that it was an emergency. Something happened in his family because his mother and father are my children's grandparents. I don't get along with him, but there's no reason why they're grandparents. You know, I didn't know what he was trying to say. Well, now you have to go back to him because the religion says once you sleep with your husband again, you break that bond and you got to go back with him. And then I felt like I was stuck again. I mean, so the whole thing was a mess. Really, and he never got what they called his fellowship for the things he did. I wasn't smart enough. I could have really, well, I did call the rape hotline, and I said to her, I said, I don't know how to say this. I said, I know this sounds kind of stupid, but I think I feel like I was raped by my husband. She goes, oh, don't feel stupid, honey. This happens all the time. And I'm glad that you called because we need people to prove this, that this happens all the time. I go, really? And I told her my situation. I said, and he bit me violently. She said, yes, he is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I showed the elders the marks, and they didn't do anything about it. But guess who they kicked out? Me.
Yeah, that's make just
sense?
Crazy.
Does that make sense?
Well, and lucky you. You got away from all that. Anyway.
That's right. They did me a favor now. I was hurt then, but I realized it was a big favor.
No, that's right, you know. Mm-hmm. So today, how is that situation looked at with that abuser?
Well, he's on his third marriage, and ironically, probably about, I guess my daughter's around 18 years old at that time. He remarried, you know, that lady that I told you he was married to, and he had twins with her. Also, I have twins, but he had twins with her also. It's funny how he had twins. And I had the girls, she had the kids, the boys with him. So now he's visiting New York, and I see him with the two boys, but the mother's not there. Now, meanwhile, she was in on the kidnapping, you know, with the... If this was today's times, and he did this in today's age, oh, boy, I could have got both of them. Oh, boy. Because back then, when I called the police said, well, he's the father, so it's not really kidnapping. It's not a stranger. But the laws have changed. So, you know. But anyway, I see him, and I said to my daughter, I said, what's he doing with those boys? Where's the mother? I don't know. She's still in California. I said, get her on the phone, even though I did not like the woman. I said, get her on the phone. So I said to tell her, say, do you know where the kids are? Oh, no, I was looking all over for him. He just left. I said, well, tell him. See, she couldn't talk to me. The wife could not talk to me because I was labeled in the religion as disfellowshipped. And when a person is disfellowshipped in the religion, no one is allowed to talk to you because you're marked. You're like you're dead to everybody. So she couldn't, even if I had to tell her something that would save her life, she can't listen to anything that comes out of my mouth. So I had my daughter relay her the message, and then sure enough, he did the same thing to her. He took those kids and brought them here. But she was one of the ones that did it to me as well. And I said to myself, sometimes if you're good enough, God lets you see it in front of your face.
Mm-hmm.
She got what she did to me, he did to her. So, again, it's a pattern, too, with him. So now they're divorced, and he met this other woman, and they're married, I think, maybe a couple of years now. So I don't know what's going on, you know, with that, but I'm sure it's not good. But of course, you know.
Probably not any different. Yeah.
No. Definitely not. Definitely not. So.
Now, in all this was going on, did you not have your parents or any siblings or anybody that you thought you could turn to?
No. Because what happened was, at one point, I didn't. He had a restraining on. He had an order on me that I couldn't leave the state. So that was when I had. That was when I had custody. So he would try to, you know, if he found out that I was even visiting New York, he would have me extradited as for kidnapping. But I didn't even know. That wasn't even in my head. That should have gave me the smarts to say, why is he doing that? Because he had that plan, you know. He had that plan, but I didn't realize it, the role reversed, he did that. He took the kids from me.
Right.
Yep. But it was his plan the whole time. He didn't really want them either. It's just to hurt me. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But by poisoning them, he did a good job. He did a good job on that.
So you were just saying that right to this day, you don't really have a good relationship with your daughter?
No, or with my son, no. Mm-mm. Nope, not at all.
So how do they look at their father? I mean, do they look at him as the hero, or they look at you as the villain?
No, they don't like either one of us, really. I mean, they don't. Not that they don't. I mean, they probably care, but I don't see it. It's just like I can't like put a term, maybe like brother and sister, maybe like I'm a sister, maybe not even that close, kind of. It's hard to explain. You'd have to, it's...
There's just a big distance in between.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it is. It is terrible. But I feel I'm not, my conscience is clean because I didn't do anything, you know, to ruin it.
Right.
Or, you know, but I always felt like when they would come to me on the weekends when I did get custody, I mean, not custody, but visitation, because then he had that. And I was one of the first women that were paying him child support. Do you believe me? And I was working at Subway Sandwich Place in Anaheim, California, making chump change, and you're taking that money from me. He wanted to control me. He really wanted to destroy me is what he... His ultimate goal was to destroy me because he lost the best thing that he ever had. And you know, I'm not bragging, but it's the truth because I was a good cook. I was a good mom. I'm Italian background, so I'm really family-oriented. And I wasn't brought up, like, in California where, you know, everything was Burger King and all that. And I was brought up, you know, I can make things homemade. You know, I came from, like, good Italian background. And so he disgraced everything about me. And he grew up, he was Italian too, but he grew up in California. And his parents weren't as, I guess, they were more Americanized than me, or I should say, in a way. And so, like, whenever he, he would be in with his friends, he'd call me Guinea. These are names that are, if you're Italian, they're derogatory names. Guinea, WAP, all these names that make fun of me. And I'm saying, well, why'd you marry me? If you don't like Italians, why did you marry me? You're Italian yourself. But he didn't feel like he fit in the role, I guess, and it was anything he could, he put me down, anything and everything. And to this day, now, he'll say, you know, your mother was a good cook. But when I was there, nothing was good enough for him. Nothing. If I didn't put the salt on the table, he would get a fit and start throwing things all over. Yes, you didn't put the salt on the table. I forgot, I'm busy, I'm running with the baby, I'm doing this. Can't you just get the salt? You're supposed to, everything I did was never good enough for this man. Never.
Wow.
And I used to literally get a stomachache knowing that he would be coming home at 4 o'clock because he would be home by 4 o'clock clockwork every day. And I used to think, oh, no, God, please, I was starting to get the stomachache. What's going to make him tick off today? I don't know. I made sure there was not one toy in that living room, okay, when he walked in. I made sure, come on, kids, pick up everything. Pick up the toys and play inside with him. And he would find some. And there was another time. This guy was the most cruelest person I've ever met, really, in my life. I had a surgery, and I purposely took the surgery over the weekend. So this way that he could be someone, because like I said, I didn't have any family members in California. All my family was in New York. So I purposely was able to get this surgery done on the weekend. So he was off on the weekend so he could spend time with the children. So I went, I had the operation, and then I think it was probably Sunday evening when I was discharged. I was discharged on the Sunday. So now I couldn't walk that good, and I was still on antibiotics, whatever, and I was a little still foggy because they gave me painkillers. So anyway, I walked in the house, and my God, it was an apartment. It was a three-bedroom apartment. He made those kids destroy this place like there's no tomorrow. So this way I can't heal, and I got to work, you know, clean up this mess. So I came in, and I said like a little prayer when I walked in. I said, God, please, whatever it is, if it's there, Don't let me see it. I just need to lay down. And so I said to him, listen, he goes, the dishes were piled up for 2 days. There was a big mess in there. So I walked and I said, let me go into the bedroom and lay down. And he purposely, now, you know when you have surgery and you had stitches and no kind of jumping, you will pull, you know, you feel like a jerk. You know, you don't realize the muscles you have until you have a surgery. So I was laying on the, I got to lay on the bed a little bit, and he jumped on the bed. I go, oh, don't do that. And he started laughing because he knew that that would hurt me. You know, he wanted to hurt me. So I said to myself, okay, what we're going to do now is you're going to get out of this bed and you're going to go sleep in the little one's room, my son's room. Now, I was so out of it and tired, and I laid down. And years ago, they used to have this toy. The kids used to have it. Was like, it's called a big wheel, but my son had the little wheel. It was a small one of that. So that was in the bedroom, and he goes, he walks in the room, and he goes, something smells in here. And I didn't smell it because I was so out of it. I go, oh, I don't know what it is. I said, please just let me rest. I said, I'll figure it out what it is tomorrow. Please let me lay down, whatever. So he goes, there, I see what it is. And I said, okay, if you see what it is, don't worry. I'll take care of it tomorrow. It's on the big wheel. My little one rode in dog mess. I said, okay. I said, listen, I mean, as much as I would want to, I can't bend down. I said, listen, I'll take care of it tomorrow. I'll take care of it. He goes, you get up and take care of it now before I put it in your face. And he took the big wheel. It was a little plastic thing. It's a plastic, it's not heavy.
Right.
But he said, please, don't put it, you know, it was, I jumped up. And I said, all right, I'll take it. I'll wash it. He didn't care. I had stitches. I could have bled to death or whatever. He made me do that just to hurt me, he was a horrible person. He was the kind of person, too, if you would say he knew you were scared of something, he'd hide and he'd pop out on you to scare you.
Oh, gosh.
No, seriously. Like one time he hid in the closet and then all of a sudden he came out. Ah, he was sadistic. Really sadistic.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only giving you some of the things this guy did.
Exactly.
I could go on and on with this guy. He really, he was a horror story.
Well, we definitely thank God that you was able to finally pull away from that. And just today, me and a friend of mine was just not talking about that religion thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, really?
How churches can tell you to stay in something that they know is killing you, you know what I mean? So
exactly.
How can you tell an individual to stay into something that's killing them? Evidently, you must be doing the same thing, you know what I mean, in your household. Cause
that's true. That is very true, yep.
Telling somebody to stay and get their ass beat, you must be beating your woman at home.
That's true. You're right about that because
right.
It takes one to know one because it's protecting him. It's protecting him.
Yeah.
You know, it's
ain't
money.
No real person gonna tell you to do that, period. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's so much religion going on and not enough saving going on. You feel me?
That's true.
That's right. A lot of the plate is being passed in the church once again.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that plate goes around.
Not enough saving lives in the church.
Exactly.
You know, everybody want the big suit and the big Cadillac.
There you go.
They go and yell for a couple of hours, and next thing you know, he done made a few $1,000 and Juju and Johnny next street over.
That's right. That's true.
So I don't talk what people do, but I just keep it 100. You know, I don't go in nobody's church just to
Same thing.
And talking about passing the plate. No, pass this money out to the people who need it. And
thank
that's
you.
The people that's out
right.
here in the street. Because at the end of your journey, God ain't going to ask you how much money you had. He ain't going to ask you what kind of house and car you drove.
Exactly.
He's looking at the work you did to bring my people close to me.
That's
why I stay in the hood. I stay in the streets when I'm doing what I do. because that's what God was. You feel me? I'm not no man that's in no pulpit. I'm out in the streets, and when I'm in the hood, everybody be like, wow. You know what I mean? Even though you do certain things and live in a certain way, you always come back down and help your fellow man. Because I live up in old rules. You know what I mean? I treat my brother and sister as I treat myself. And I treat
myself
and I'm good. And that's the same rule I live with my wife, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I treat my wife like I treat myself. I mean, if I treat myself good, she got that coming. But if I treat myself well, she ain't got shit coming either. So come on, it don't take a blind person to see what's real out here. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And these churches don't... Well, they don't get it. They do get it, really. It's just like you said, it's all about money. Yes, they get the money. But, I mean, they don't get it in the sense that, you know, they don't care if, you know, what's happening in your life. It's just about what you got in your pocket. And
that place, they're going to tell you, can you get your ass beat? Just come to church and bring that money. After you done that, you get that out there.
That's right.
God will provide Sister So-and-so with some good service. But Sister So-and-so come in head half beat off. That offering.
Right. You know what irks me about that too is, like, you see these programs on TV and they say, oh, well, send the money because if you sow seed, you know, it's going to come back to you or whatever. Yes, I believe that because that's scriptural. And if you do sow seeds of goodness, you will get them. If you sow seeds of badness, you get it back. But their seeds are not talking about those kind of seeds. They're talking about money seeds, okay?
They want your
money. That's what they want. And,
they
you know, you
stuff,
I can find other ways to give money to, like, maybe cancer research or, I mean, I can sow seeds that way. I can sow seeds where if I feel that, you know, feed the hungry, I always feel for the Bowery down here in New York, and I try to always give, you know, the Bowery money or whatever, because these people, it's like, you know, they're Skid Row or whatever, and they need a meal. I don't just do it on Thanksgiving. I don't just do it on Christmas. I give it to them all the time. You know what I mean? So I don't need to give it to the preacher on the TV. I mean, well, he's fat pockets already. I need to give it to the hungry man.
You can do your tithing every day by helping other people. It doesn't have to be in the church.
Thank you. That's exactly how I feel.
And that's where it counts, when you're out really helping people.
You know? And then there's another thing I noticed is just recently I wrote to one pastor. I'm not going to mention his name, but I was going I think I told you, Rob, me and my husband were going through a difficult time. I'm remarried, but financially. I think I told you both. But anyway, this guy is out there sending money here and sending money there. And I said, you know, I'm not associated with him. I don't go to his church and that because he's in Texas or whatever. But I watch him, you know, because some things he says are good or whatever. So I wrote to it. I emailed. And so I said, listen, I'm in a very bad situation, blah, 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 blah. And I was wondering if maybe you could help out somehow, even if you just help me out. And then, you know, when I get on my feet, I will do more for you, you know, believe me. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't do that. No, you know why you don't do that? He said, our call is to preach the word. But you're out there every Sunday asking for donations. But you can't help somebody? This guy's loaded to the gills. But you can't help somebody with some little bit of money that you've got. Multi-million, I see how many people go to his events and his whatever seminars or whatever he's got, and I say to myself, he couldn't spare a little bit of money? That's like a penny. When I was, you know, I didn't even ask him for a figure, but it's just the idea. But no, I'm sorry, we're not supposed to do that because we have to, our call is to preach the word. Well, what did Jesus say? I mean, not that I'm going to be preaching now, but the point is, what did he say? When I was hungry, did you feed me? When I had no place to stay, doesn't that go under that umbrella? No, but you can't do that for people. And you know what else they do?
Right.
You know, so me and really, I have nothing I don't have anything to do with religion anymore. I believe in God. I believe in the Bible. That's the way I keep it. I don't want to belong to any organization.
Well, unfortunately, yeah, there's just so many people out here taking advantage of making money, and it is a business. And, you know, and they might be preaching the gospel, and they might be preaching good things, but they're still there to make money, because if they weren't making money, they wouldn't be preaching.
Thank you.
Because they're not just there to share the word. They're there to make money as they share the word, which is cool. I mean, you need to be able to feed yourself.
You need an income,
your church and all that, exactly. But when it comes to these people making millions of dollars and they're not helping the homeless people that live around the corner,
no, and they're not.
Wrong.
And you know what I noticed too? The reason why they don't help anybody in their area is because they go to, like, say, on the TV, you'll see it say, oh, help feed these kids in Africa and all these other countries. And, you know, they've done it in Korea or whatever. And what they're doing is that's how they get recruits. See, here, if I help you, oh, then you're not Castilian. You might not be in my belief system. You might be Catholic. So even if I help you, it's not going to increase my membership because you're Catholic. I'll help you, but you're Catholic. But if I go out there and go to these other countries and start recruiting people and saying, listen, I'll help you get this. I'll help you get this. You know, our church will help you, blah, 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 build schools, whatever. That's putting a big dent in them, and then they're looking like they're good people. And not only that, these people are going to feel a sense of loyalty to this particular group, and then they're going to become involved in that group. So it's all about recruitment, and it's all about the dollar. Because the more recruits, the more dollars.
Definitely.
And people in
the cults, the underground cults and stuff, that really... well, I won't even get to that. But the cult.
But I know what you
that's
mean.
How they, exactly. That's how they get their people in there. They buy them everything they need. House, clothes, give
there
them money,
go.
Give them everything. And that's how they win them over. And then,
yeah.
And then what? And then you got to give up your firstborn in a bloodbath ceremony for the church? Come on.
Yeah, and yourself.
That really happens out there.
Yourself. You lose your whole self,
yes,
along the way because
you
do you everything
do.
For the church. You know,
and it's all again a controlling issue. They have that power and control over you, and they have you do, and you're doing anything for them.
Exactly. So that's basically how, I mean, in the relationship, and I was involved in the religion. Between the two, I was torn. So that's why I do what I do. I try to get different people to speak, and I started out, when I started out with Victims Speak Out, I had a partner who has since died, but he was the one who wanted me to start the program. I was a little, you know, frightened at first, and he goes, no, you do good, you talk good, you'll be okay. So we started it, and it was basically for people that were victims of religious abuse, you know, like spiritual abuse, because pedophiles, there's a lot of pedophiles in religions, and domestic violence. A lot of the women stay in those relationships because the church makes them feel obligated to stay. So that was my forte, and I used that because even my example, I stayed long as I did because of the religion.
Right.
So what advice would you give someone that's going through that right now, as far as social, what advice do you give that individual?
Well, if you're in a relationship, and it's the relationship is always the person's way, and you start to feel like you have no say so. He watches everything that you do, in the sense that he's, what time did you come home? Where were you? You were supposed to be home at this time. And he starts to become very jealous and starts to show that he has a bad temper, and whatever you do is wrong. Those are signs that you're in a serious relationship with a person that has anger issues. And it starts out like a little bit, you know, maybe little put downs here and there. And then it becomes more and more. And then at their point, they don't care how they talk to you in front of anybody. They'll say anything they want and they don't care. And maybe start slapping you. And then after they start slapping you, then it be because you don't do anything about it, it becomes punching. My advice is to you, if you're afraid and you don't want to get out of the situation, what you should do is you should call a local hotline. You're not committed to leave, just to talk to someone that's professional and knows the mentality of a batterer, and to guide you, and to, if you don't, they don't want to leave the premises, you can go to, they have new, they're not called shelters now. There's some of, there is shelters, but there's another one that they call, that you can go in there and speak
like
to them.
Safe haven?
Yes. Yeah, but not, safe haven, I think they shelter you. Like I was in the shelter, they housed me. But there is ones that you can go down there and just talk to them. They won't report him. They'll just talk to you. They'll explain how these men work and what their next move is. And a lot of times they threaten you that they're going to kill you. A lot of times they threaten to take the children away. Don't take these as light threats because they really will carry it out. Okay?
Right.
It happened to me. I mean, he did say he was going to take them, and he did. So my advice to you is if you're in a relationship where it's all about him and pushing you around and you're in a serious relationship, you need to talk to a professional. You don't have to go to no psychiatrist, anybody like that. You just call the hotline. They are very, very good at listening. They won't put you down. They'll listen to what you have to say. They'll encourage you. And I know that it's very scary, but it's worse if the children don't have a parent.
Right.
Definitely.
Now, let me ask you
Definitely.
This right here, Ms. Bonifuco.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give a young lady that is going back and forth with this kind of relationship and taking the guy back, not taking him back, taking him back? What kind of advice would you give that young lady with the going back and forth?
I know. That's what happens. We do that. I did that, too. I went back and forth a lot of times. And in the meantime, I was still talking. But my advice is, really, I know it's hard, but you really shouldn't go back and forth, because each time you go back, he gets worse. Because he sees, he takes a little bit. Oh, she let me hit her this time, and she took me back. She forgave me. Then it escalates to another level. Unfortunately, you don't see that because you love the person and you want the person, you're committed to the relationship. You may have children. You don't want your children to be not have a father. But remember one thing is, don't you want to living with this person, he may actually hurt you so bad one day in front of your child that you may not even live to see tomorrow. So you really need to look at this, and if he's the person that you're living with is a criminal. That's exactly what they are, a criminal. That's what you got to come down to reality. You are living with a criminal, and it's not an anger problem. The person is a criminal because, put it this way, if he hit somebody outside, a woman on the street, and punched her the way he punches you, he would be arrested. And you would look in and say, oh, my God, look at what happened to this lady. Well, he's doing it to you. Wake up.
That's right.
You cannot go back, even though you want to. I had a woman that I used to, when I was a Jehovah's Witness, I had a Bible student. And it was good that me and her did study because she was a victim of abuse also. And I saw this with my own eyes, and I never forgot this. The guy actually ran over her leg. And I saw it, and I heard, and I'm, oh, my God,
mm-hmm.
I saw it. I went to visit her and have a Bible study with her, and he started wigging out, and she ran out of the house, and when she ran out of the house, she ran behind. She she fell and that he backed over her, and I saw it live. So, I mean, it's serious. I mean, this is serious.
Yeah.
My advice is don't go back. I know you can weaken. You can call the shelter and tell them. You can always call them and say, listen, I'm getting weak. I feel like I want to go back to my husband. Maybe you need to be reinforced again. It's just like anything else. If you're addicted to something, it's an addictive relationship. And
right.
You're addicted to something, you will get withdrawals, but you have to fight those withdrawals because they're not
right.
good for you. They're not good for
exactly.
you.
Mary,
right.
we have a caller on the line.
Okay.
This is Lisa. She also has a talk show dealing with domestic violence and was a domestic violence survivor. So welcome, Lisa.
Hey, babies. What y'all doing?
Welcome to the show tonight. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Lucinda. Hey, Miss Mary.
Hi. How are you?
Let's talk about Sicilian style.
I hear you.
Were you around the Christmas tree? And all your uncles, I'm Italian.
Oh, yeah?
And I'm Italian. And my grandmother was from Sicily, and she would have Christmas dinner, and all the uncles and all the family would have the guns. That's the first time I ever saw a gun around the Christmas tree.
Really?
And, yeah. And I think the worst thing I saw, well, no, I saw a lot more because I came from Newark after that.
Okay.
But, the worst thing I saw, and I was abused. I'll get into that in a minute. But I think the worst thing I saw was when my grandfather threw the damn salt shaker straight at me, talking about fill this up. And I'm looking at him. I was 9 years old.
I know. Yeah, I had that.
So you already know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
The Sicilian don't play. The guns don't play. A bullet ain't got no name. Like, I could go into so much that you said. I've been sitting here listening to you all night. I was 5 minutes late. I apologize, Rob and Lucinda. But they always think it's the hood. Okay, I'm from the hood. But I was from Sicily.
Okay.
I mean, my grandmother came straight over from the boat.
Okay. Yep.
So I had to deal with that, Miss Mary. I had to deal with that and look at that when I was a little girl. And then, like you said, you saw him ride over the car. I mean, ride over his leg.
Yeah,
that ain't nothing. That ain't nothing. I mean, sometimes I wonder what's worse, the Italians or the hood. Because I'm from Newark.
Yeah, I know. Hello?
And
yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah,
okay.
We're here. You know, and again, though, we can't say that just because you're Italian or Sicilian or from the hood that you're going to be abused, because it comes from every race, religion, culture, everything.
Definitely. I
you
mean,
know,
people
and,
that are
and I know, me, you're
doctors,
yeah, trying to
doctors
describe
doctors
to somebody what it might be like, somebody that maybe has never been around it,
right.
But it is definitely not discriminating.
Oh, no, because it's a disorder. Disorder
right.
doesn't have this, you know, doesn't a disorder is a disorder. But I know what she's saying, too, though, because in Italian families, the husband rules the roost. And
exactly.
so when I went into it, I was already made for it, you know, because I was used to the father is the full takes full control over the family. So and then being in that religion, that endorsed it. And
right.
yeah, it just goes with it, you know, being an Italian wife, the women get hollered at, they get screamed at, you know. I agree with her on that. But
I'll get into it even deeper because I was married to a black man.
Okay.
That beat me, sodomized me, raped me every day for 2 years, knocked my teeth out, everything.
Oh my goodness.
So listen to me when I tell you that, like my sister Lucinda said, it's in every race. Every race.
Yeah, I know that, yeah.
Okay, so I'm Italian and Cherokee. So I've never been in the tribe. My father was pure Cherokee. So now you've got Sicily and Cherokee in me. So now when they find out I'm married outside my race, I married a black man, all of a sudden I got disowned.
Right.
But you know what? On the strength my hood and my brothers that adopted me and took me under their wings from Newark, they got my back better than the Italians, better than anything. Mm-hmm. Better than anything. And I can tell you the hell that I've gone through. I was put in a coma. Everything.
Really?
Everything.
From the injuries or from an injury from the assault?
I was raped, sodomized, and beaten 90s after.
Yeah,
by my ex-husband. Ex-husband. Okay. He didn't know where I was. He found me 9 days after I gave birth to baby girl.
Wow.
So trust and believe. Trust and believe. I mean, I remember crawling out into the parking lot from my house where he had beat me and just choked me till the point where I couldn't breathe.
I
crawled out of my house into the parking lot in Florida. I will never forget that, Jacksonville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when I hear you talking, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
It's like I keep saying, it's not just one race. It's a whole lot of races.
Oh, definitely.
These men, and it's females, too. Females beat on their men in front of kids.
Yes.
And like you said, the children. And I swear to God on everything I love, when I do my domestic violence show, I tell it all the time. It's the kids that are the victim, the children.
That's right.
Because they see
their
mom or dad is getting put through.
Exactly.
And they don't have to see that. So if you in it, get the hell out of it. If you don't want to get the hell out of it, get your kids out.
Right. And I thought I was doing the right thing. I thought I was doing the right thing by getting out of the situation, which I was doing the right thing, but it came back to bite me because he took my kids. He won all the way around. I'll tell you that. I mean, I threw in the towel, but he won all the way around because he wanted, his whole thing was to destroy me. And he didn't destroy me in the sense that I'm still in there fighting. But the thing is that he took the thing that mostly meant most to me in my life and was my children. And he won on that.
Right.
And I'm going to say he won that. All right. But
they're
that's okay.
They're definitely the victims.
Okay. But.
Okay, now, this is what I did. I have sole custody.
Okay.
Sole custody of my child. How about this? Now, this is before the baby was born.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin Lucinda know this story. They've heard me on the show many a times where I was actually in my condo because I was in the townhouse, my bad. And I had left out from Florida, got back to Jersey. His parents was the only ones that knew where I was besides my brother Sal and them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now I'm in the townhouse, picked the baby up at school. She doing her homework, and I'm cooking dinner.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff's department shows up and tells me I gotta leave. They have a restraining order against me because he found out where I lived and went to this county courthouse and told them that I tried to kill him. He didn't live there. I hadn't seen him in months. Oh, I must scream.
I know, I hear you.
What happened was, Lucinda and Rob is used to this shit with me. Trust and believe. So what happened was I had to leave my home with my child in the middle, like, it was 7 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to my mom's house. Now I got to wait. Now, he's a crackhead that beat me for 2 years, okay? So now me and this child have to leave, go to my mom's house. I don't get into court for a week. I'm screaming at the judge, wilding out, about to get a contempt of court and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm yelling at the judge, like, did you even check? I showed the sheriff's officers the lease. He didn't live there. I got out of that.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care until he gave me my keys back. And I went back to the crib. Everything that could be sold for crack was gone. So now me and my baby girl got to start over again. Me and Princess had to start over again. And baby girl on the way. I'm pregnant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, I could tell you stories for days. Baby girl, trust and believe that. So I know what you're living through. I've been through that hell.
Mm-hmm.
I've been through both sides of the hell. And it's not cute. It's not cute. And that's why I represent Robin Lucinda so hard with the mission, because we going to schools, and I love the both of them girls. I mean, both of them so much. Robin Lucinda is coming to Atlanta. And I've got them. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, I was going to email you. I got you in both schools. So, to do the mission statement.
Did you get the stuff I sent you?
Yep, that's what I brought over today. That's why I wasn't on Facebook like that. I was over there grinding. So at the end of the day, it's about the kids.
Of course, definitely.
It's about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Rob, you already know. You already know. I got 22 nieces and nephews in the hood and down here. And they, kids and those kids come first. Mm-hmm. And if I could protect one of them or show one of them, don't pick up that gun. Because do you realize in Jersey City this past weekend, 114 shootings.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, let's go to Newark, 77.
Right.
So,
wow,
yeah, and that's what I deal with. I get the calls all day, every day. Like, it's crazy. And I don't even answer the phone from New York. I'm not going to lie to you because I already know what it is up there.
It's hard to hear the bad news all the time.
Life for real, you just look at the phone like, oh, my God, who's got killed today or who's got this and who's got that? And I'm tired of burying family. But if these little 13 and 14-year-olds don't stop picking up the gun, that's the problem. They get a hold of a gun. They think it's cool. They get around the crowd, and they think it's cute. Oh, well, let me just grab this gun. And then they pick up that gun that first time, and they get trigger happy. So now you then, on top of it, got them beating their women. My 14-year-old niece is in the hospital because her 15-year-old boyfriend pistol whips her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is.
And that's what a lot of these kids are learning. And who are they seeing it from? A lot of the adults that are in their lives are doing the same thing.
That's right. That's so
it's
true.
The environment that they're in. That's
exactly.
The problem. And then you got the crack kid moms, the dope head fathers, and then you got, this would be cute to y'all, though. This is just to make something a little funny. But Coco, the dog over here, she go out and play football with the kids every day. They in the cul-de-sac. Coco come in here, and she's sitting up. She nodding. So Vanetta's like, we going to go to intervention with Coco. I said, worse. You know, I'm just sitting here like, the dog is nodding. What's wrong with the baby? But on some strength, like, they be telling me down here, like, Lise, you in the hood. Are you serious? I'm in a cul-de-sac in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, half a house. The other half is 3 bedrooms, 2 houses. They duplexes. And I sit there. The kids is out playing. We don't hear shots. I'm not walking out stepping over bodies in the morning like I did in Newark. God. And then on the civilian side of it, I don't got to see those guns in the pockets. And that, I swear, is the worst memory I have in my childhood is seeing that. Miss Mary, I tell you. On the Italian side, it ain't no joke. So now you've got Italian in me, hood in me. What do you think? Like, I got to stay locked up in the house. I'll just be all right.
Yeah. So, hey, now we're going to step to another thing. Miss Bonifuco got to get up. It's been, an hour. She has to get up in the morning. So we're just going to ask you, Miss Bonifuco, what message would you leave these youths and other people that are still going through this domestic violence thing? And we would like for you to give information out about your radio show as well to the viewers and what time that come on, and then we're going to come to a close.
Okay. Thanks, Robert. My message to any of the listeners that are going through any type of abuse, that you should report it. And if you're in fear to report it to the police, just call a hotline. I think it's 1-800-SAFE, and you can call that number and just speak to somebody over the phone, and then they can assist you to a local in your area. And you don't have to just leave the premises right away. You can talk to them, and they'll help you get the strength, and because it is fearful to leave because you don't know where you're going, what you're going to be doing, but you really need to get help. And the name of my program is Victims Speak Out, and it's every Tuesday at 9:30 Eastern Time, And if you need to email me, it's victimspeakout@AOL.com. So that's victimspeakout@AOL.com. Rob, I have some things that I'm going to talk to you and Lucinda about, you know, at another time. Okay?
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Sounds great.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on. Thanks, Lisa, for coming on again and
thank
sharing
you,
her story.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Good night,
Mary.
Good night. And good night, Lisa. I'll give you a call in just a little bit. And we just want to remind. What's that?
No, I said
you want to do the announcement?
No.
Or you want me to?
No. Go ahead. I don't even know.
Oh, sure you do. We want everyone to log into our website, thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. Join us. We're a social network. Spread your message on there with whatever you're doing and network with us. Also, pick up your book, Streets Don't Love You Back, and also the new hot book out, Never Hit a Woman, which is all about domestic violence, the different types of domestic violence, explains different ways, things that can help you to set up what you need to do to be able to get out of a relationship like that. And then also it has, gosh, just tons of real stories of women and what they went through in their relationships. So they're both hot books, bestsellers, Streets Don't Love You Back and Never Hit a Woman. Get those out. Order them for a Christmas gift. They make nice Christmas gifts, nice stocking stuffers. And speaking of Christmas, we also have our third annual Christmas toy drive again this year. We have that information up on our website. If you'd like to donate anything, you can mail it to us, and then we'll have drop-off places here in Arizona. So with that, boy, did I miss anything else? Let me just say this. We're speaking next Wednesday, November 23rd, at Maricopa High School, which is our kickoff to our 2012 speaking engagement book signing tour. And in December, we will be hitting San Bernardino area and Compton, L.A. area. And we have some schools and things set up for that. In January, we're hitting Detroit again. And looking towards New York, New Jersey, in between then and March. In March, we'll be out in Atlanta. As Lisa said, we're going to go out to a book event out there and then also talk to some schools in her town. So now did I miss anything?
Oh, no, everything is on point, you know. And so we thank everyone for joining us tonight and we ask you to continue keeping those who are in need in prayer and reach out and help someone if you can. And we just thank God for being here. Stay tuned for next week.
Right. And let me just add one more number here at the end of the show. If you can't find a shelter in your neighborhood or your town, you can call into the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and that's 1-800-799-7273, 1-800-799-7273. So put that number in a safe spot, and like Mary said, just call in to have some support, have somebody to talk to, and find out a little bit more about what's going on in your relationship. We're going to go out tonight with the song by JFK, Grown and Sexy. And JFK is, the label is Nicole Gambino, or what's the label word? Gambino?
BNY. Yeah,
BNY. And they're out of New York. So check him out on YouTube and get his new albums that are out. And join us again next Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific time, 11:30 Eastern. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Tell the truth, shorty, you got it going on. taking pictures with your girls, get your pose on. Got me visioning you dancing with no clothes on. Girl, you got me hot, feel like the stove on. A VIP, 5 feet, yes, it's perfect timing. You tell them come on so we can make this party private. Two-stepping, got you sweating, feeling some affection. And if you shy, you can tell me in a text message. Keep it 100 if you want it, I won't say a thing. We can leave the club now, we ain't gotta hang. Pay for the telly, tell her throat, she can keep the change. Got a sprung like to start my weekend with a bang. Open up the rock on the rocks, no chaser. Larger than life, that we need live life major. For having a good time, bottles by the cases. L's in the air, this is a celebration.
If you grow, and you sexy, maybe later on.
Independent, don't have time for a setback. Nah. She keep her nails done, her hair's jet black. High heels and she the shh like some X-Lax. Head crack, jackpot, feel like I hit the lotto. Soon as I seen her demeanor made me wanna follow. Way different, she don't kick it like the ones that I know. Dance floor, jam pack, shorty, let's go. Jump on this money train, no metro. I have you holding on tight, don't let go. If it get too fast for you, baby, just let me know. I slow it down, move it around like a merry-go. Present you flavor, nothing but the best. We doing it over here, don't worry about the rest. Nah, I'm so sincere, but I'm loving that tight dress. Coca-Cola shaped body, she got me like, yes.
If you grow.